KALW.
Noctalgia literally translates to sky grief, or grief around the accelerating loss of the home environment off our shared skies.
Some residents in West Marin are fighting to keep the lights off.
Now there's two of us who want to do it. What do we do? And they said, why don't you look into becoming a dark sky reserve? Apply together as dark sky and villages. See how many villages will come along with you.
But they will need more than just the North Star to navigate through all the municipal red tape.
Every bus is frustrating for me. It's a long, difficult process, and there's a lot of checklists. And every time we can put another check mark on, I'm so happy. I'm moving on.
A special segment from the Nocturne podcast. I'm Suni Khalid in for Hana Baba, and this is Cross Currents.
We are already losing our night sky. We're losing our ability to see the night sky when we go out to do the stargazing. A third of the southern sky is a white dome. We can't see any stars out that way.
What do we lose when light pollution makes it difficult to see the stars? Light pollution might impact migratory birds who use the stars and the moon for navigation, or hamper nocturnal pollinators such as bats, moths, and beetles. As for people, newer LED streetlights can shine into homes, disrupting sleep. But light pollution might not just hurt the environment or people's health, but also our connection to culture and history.
This is the Big Dipper, colloquial known, and it's part of a larger group of stars called Ursa Major, the Great Bear. Every culture has its own attachment, its own name, its own recognition. These were named as the seven sages in the Hindu tradition. The Ojibwe in North America saw these as the birds of summer. Right? A lot of attachments, a lot of cultures have attached meaning and recognition and stories to this group of stars.
Yesterday, in part one of the Noctalgia episode from the Nocturne podcast, we met a group in West Marin that is working to educate neighbors and lawmakers about the harms of light pollution. The group, Dark Sky West Marin, has two goals: to reduce light pollution and to become a designated dark sky community. It's mainly run by two women, Peggy Day and Laura Arndt, along with night sky tours run by their guide, Don Jolly. Today, we continue their story. Here is the producer of Nocturne, Vanessa Lowe.
We belong to this galaxy. This is our home. And the night sky is where we see the concrete, magnificent, and awe-inspiring evidence of our place in it all. Unless we can't. And I think this goes to the heart of the matter. Realizing we're losing the most tangible, visible evidence of our connection to the universe brings a particular kind of grief.
Hey, Don, have you heard of the term noctalgia?
No, tell me about it.
Somebody forwarded me an article from, I think it's Space Magazine.
Okay.
And it's a new term that astronomers have coined, which is a word for sky grief, as
oh
the light
gosh.
Pollution sort of takes over. Noctalgia.
Yeah, I think people are experiencing noctalgia. Yeah, that's an interesting term. I'm glad somebody's actually formalized it with a,
yeah,
with a word.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I'll send you the article if you
want.
That
would be really great. Send that to me. I'd love to read up on that.
Okay.
Incorporate it into our story here. Noctalgia.
Yeah.
It's a great word.
Yeah. I don't know if you've been privy to any of the recent press. There's been some interviews and whatnot. And John Barentine, have you been talking to him at all?
No, not yet.
Okay, talk to him. You can get his contact through Peggy.
Okay.
He's in Arizona but works independently now. He was part of the International Dark Sky Association. And so he's got a lot of data that they generated on light pollution. And he was saying that at present rates, by looking at satellite images of the Earth, under present circumstances with the increase in lighting gradually, that somebody who's born in this era is likely to see only half the stars that are visible today by the time they reach adulthood. the 10%, basically, there's a reduction.
Yes, a study that was published last year in the journal Science looked at about a decade's worth of observations of the night sky. And what they found is, on a global average, during that time, the average person's night sky was getting brighter at the rate of about 10% per year. My name is John Barentine. I got my PhD in astronomy at the University of Texas at Austin, and I am a dark sky consultant.
In one of those strange synchronicities of the universe, while Don hadn't heard the word noctalgia, he did know John Barentine, because John was already working with Dark Sky West Marin.
Yes, and I have been working with them as sort of an informal advisor for most of the last year or so. So noctalgia is a word that we devised that implies a sense of longing or loss having to do with not only the night sky, but the night itself as a place.
John coined the term noctalgia in a published letter to the journal Science with another astronomer who's based just about an hour south of Point Reyes Station.
My name is Aparna Venkatesan, and I'm an astronomer at the University of San Francisco. Noctalgia is a neologism that John Barentine and I coined together. It literally translates to sky grief, or grief around the accelerating loss of the home environment of our shared skies.
I was blown away when I first came across this new word, noctalgia, just a few weeks before I came to Don's October stargazing event. It captured what I'd been feeling for a long time. And while most people I asked hadn't heard the word yet, noctalgia seemed to me to be a motivating force in what the Dark Sky Marin folks were trying to accomplish. They were connecting with their own sky grief and channeling it into action. And the depth and ubiquity of noctalgia was such that the pieces began to fall into place incredibly quickly once Peggy and Laura got the ball rolling.
It's like everything was kismet, but Laura has been like the inspiration, the guiding light through this whole process. And she kept insisting I go to this website called darksky.org. And when I went there, I found all these answers to all the issues that we've been dealing with alone out here in Point Reyes. Everybody's dealing with in all their towns all over the world. And I quickly became a member of darksky.org. And when we started looking into becoming a dark sky town, I realized we would need a lighting ordinance to eliminate the further growth of light pollution here at Point Reyes. And we were able to make a free call to darksky.org and say, hey, we have this idea. They say, here's your next steps. And then one of the steps was to get in touch with Dennis Redoni and say, hey, we'd like to do this. Are you down with it?
Our first speaker tonight is our Mercury, our planet of communication. He was the first person we approached with our dark sky idea. And he not only committed to the initiative, he wrote us a step-by-step plan that we've followed ever since. Please welcome Supervisor Dennis Redoni.
You know, it's not often that you have a non-controversial issue come to you, especially in West Marin and especially in the County of Marin. That's why it was such a pleasure to help with this, because while it's an international event and an international program, we totally control it ourselves here locally and can make the decision what to do about it, how to turn off the switch, and how to make it beautiful here. And I'm so happy that in District 4, all our villages on the coast have decided to participate.
After we talked to Dennis, we started looking into dark sky, what we have to do. We knew we'd have to start our education program. And we got in touch with Marty Knapp because he's our local photographer. Marty told us about this guy, Don Jolly, who is an astronomer and a teacher. And we called Don and he said, I've been wanting you to call, I've been waiting for you to call me. Don offered to do stargazing classes for us out on the Joaquimini wetlands.
The excitement was ratcheting up. The group was in contact with Dark Sky International. They now had a monthly stargazing event as part of their education program. And the Marin County supervisor was on board to help move the needle on lighting ordinances. Around the same time, folks from the Point Reyes National Seashore got in touch because they were also concerned about light pollution and thinking about becoming a dark sky park.
And then early on, there was an article about what we were doing in the Point Reyes Light. And the new director of education at the park, Christine Beekman, read it And she had been thinking about, what if White Rays became a dark sky park? So she got in touch with us, and we met, and it was very easy, simpatico, working together with Christine.
Our North Star, our Polaris, our guiding light, came to us 2 years ago with an offer to combine efforts and become an international dark sky designee together. We'd like to welcome the woman who's leading our way through the dark sky application, Point Reyes National Seashores, interpretation, education, and volunteer leader and public information officer, Christine Beekman.
I wanted to get into a little bit of the background of what we've been doing at the park to lead the effort in dark sky reserve certification. We're just at the very beginning steps, but we're really excited, and there's full support on behalf of the park management team and, quite honestly, everybody. The mission of the National Park Service is preservation and protection of natural and cultural resources, and to provide for the enjoyment therein, dark skies falls very neatly into all of the mission of the National Park Service. When I had approached PEG and the Point Reyes Village Association, little did I know that there was an entire division of the National Park Service, Natural Sounds and Night Skies Division, and they came right to our service, which has been really wonderful. They maintain a database of collection of park units that they have taken images from night skies, including here at Point Reyes. The last ones that were done were in 2008 and 2009. So the bottom line is probably the most revealing, the percent stars visible. Mount Vision, about 78%. Sea Lion Overlook, almost 80%. It's not too shabby. We're pretty close to San Francisco and to see 80% of the night sky. And so we went ahead and inventoried all the light fixtures in the park. So we inventoried 1,200 light fixtures. I was hoping that we were in compliance with most of our lighting, and it turned out we weren't. It's good. It means that, yes, there's more work ahead, but it's good. We're being educated. So I will end with, I think that this dark sky certification is just a nod to earlier conservation efforts in West Marin in particular, where earlier conservationists protected the land and the water beneath our feet, and we're doing our part to protect the resources above our heads. Thank you.
And we joined together, we went back to Dark Sky, we said, now there's two of us who want to do it. What do we do? And they said, why don't you look into becoming a Dark Sky Reserve, apply together as dark sky and villages, see how many villages will come along with you. And so we started working towards a dark sky reserve.
This was huge. If the West Marin villages and the national park joined forces, they could pursue status as not just a dark sky community, but as a dark sky reserve, a more stringent and impressive designation. Point Reyes would become one of only three dark sky reserves in the United States, and the closest one to a major city. Ultimately, this ambitious effort to become a dark sky reserve proved to be too complicated. In addition, the Park Service hit some funding issues that put their own efforts to be a dark sky park on hold. It was a significant bump in the road, and Peggy tried to take it in stride.
Christine sent a message that all of the leaders of the park of Point Reyes National Seashore wanted everyone to know that they were totally committed on becoming a dark sky park, that this is not an abandonment. It's just they have to pause until they get the resources to do it.
It was going originally to be proposed in conjunction with the National Seashore, but for various reasons that I'm not fully informed on, the Village Association parted ways with the national park. My understanding is that the idea there was that getting a federal area designated, which the park is still pursuing, would slow down ostensibly the acquisition of dark sky recognition for the municipalities, the villages up and down the coast. And so it was decided maybe it would be more efficient to apply separately.
Every month, we watch this next speaker wind his laser light up through half of the heavens above as he traces the path of Drago the Dragon. Please welcome Don Jolly.
Thank you. Thank you all for coming in. I'm going to begin by telling a little story of Polynesian sailors who hundreds of years ago were able to navigate a featureless ocean successfully by marking the rise and set points of known groups of stars across the sky. Phenomenal. European sailors, meanwhile, not quite so talented, but navigated mostly by land, but once out of sight of land, they too relied on the stars. And I've read accounts of sailors, stalwart sailors, who, when they discovered they were crossing southward over the equator, actually fell sobbing inconsolably at the rails of their ships as they watched the pole star, the North Star, disappear below the horizon, realizing that suddenly they were without a bearing reference and effectively, for all intents, lost at sea. I wonder about that. I wonder if the disappearance of one star can evoke that kind of emotion, unbridled emotion, and frankly, fear. What then might the disappearance of hundreds or perhaps thousands of stars kindle in us as people? And that's exactly where we are today. The Milky Way galaxy has been deemed invisible by 30% of the world's population. Move to North America and that percentage jumps to 80%. 80% of North Americans cannot see the Milky Way at all. And the great alarm in that is that the Milky Way is our home. You look at the Milky Way and you're looking at the community of stars to which our sun and its planet, its attendant planets, belong. It's our community. You look at that band of the Milky Way, which we are fortunate enough to see from here, and you're looking at Main Street. That's our town. Now you're gonna say, okay, wait a minute, wait, the stars are just incomprehensibly distant. How can we claim that that's our town, that we belong in any way to that? But when I go outside, I'm made acutely aware that those stars are at my fingertips. They're that close. In fact, those stars are my fingertips. Because I'm aware that every cell in my body, every chemical compound of which I'm composed, and not only me, but also the barking dog next door, the lovely apple on the tree, the blue whale, the redwood, the blue jay, every physical aspect of my world is comprised of elements that came from out there, most of which were forged in the bellies of stars. And so when I look at the sky, I'm not looking at some remote, fiery, scientifically arcane structures. I'm looking at my home. In fact, when you walk out tonight, when you walk outside here tonight, keep in mind that you are quite literally walking on stardust. And so it's not so much the matter that the ground is here and the stars are there, but I find grounding in looking at the stars. And then I find the stars right underfoot.
Well, as Don says, it's a sense of here-ness that I'm here and I'm part of this, and this is that the sky is part of this world. And, you know, all is well. I go out at night and the Big Dipper, the Little Dipper, and Polaris are right where they belong, you know. I remember learning about them as a child and I teach my grandchildren about them.
So where things stand now, the villages comprising Dark Sky West Marin are working on getting recognition on their own as a dark sky community. That effort still has a ways to go and will involve the county updating lighting ordinances to be in compliance with Dark Sky International's requirements. The National Seashore will pursue designation as a dark sky park when funding allows. The ultimate goal is still to become a dark sky reserve, but it's anyone's guess when those stars will align. Like Peggy, Laura Arndt is focusing on one step at a time.
The Board of Supervisors, they have discussed writing a policy about dark sky, and that seems like a good place to start. And so the dark sky official that works with us, the county meetings we're having, we just keep discussing, you know, different obstacles, different problems, different ways to get around it. So we're just slowly moving it forward. I do feel like it's going forward, and I do feel like the more activities we do and outreach we do, the more support there is. And I feel like because of that, it will just continue to grow. And because of light pollution increasing at 10% a year, you know, when people hear that, they want to do something about it.
Every pause is frustrating for me because it's a long, difficult process, and there's a lot of checklists, a lot of long checklists with little minute details that have to be done. And every time we can put another check mark on, I'm so happy. I'm just moving on. It means a lot to me that we accomplish this. It's doable, and I hope it's doable in my lifetime, but I'm not sure. I had a heart attack last year, and that made me kind of face my own mortality in a very profound way. And when that happens, it doesn't leave. You question your mortality all the time. So I'm concerned that with this pause, that I'm not going to be around when this happens. I want to see it, you know. I want to drive into town and see the sign up on the entrance to town that says Dark Sky Community. My grandchildren are funny because some of them are teenagers. They're like, "You're gonna turn out our lights. We need our lights." But really, I think about my grandfather pointing out the difference between the Big Dipper and the Little Dipper to me, and just wanting my grandchildren to have memories like that, you know. And they'll be able to say, "My grandma worked hard to make it possible for us to show our grandchildren," you know. Yeah.
I talk to people now who'll say, "Yeah, I remember, you know, growing up as a kid in the 1950s, and it just seemed like the stars were so much more visible at the time." And the fact is that they were, and those stars have gradually been taken away from them. But it doesn't have to be that way. And there's still an opportunity for us to reverse this trend. The evidence shows that we can roll back this loss, and we can make the sky darker so we can see the stars better.
So I think the antidote for noctalgia is awe, A-W-E, and laying out under the stars and reconnecting to our most ancient selves.
So I'm going to finish up with this. Keep in mind that every star you see belongs to the Milky Way. Every one of these is in the Milky Way, including our sun. And so laying here on my back, I'm looking at my home, and this is a great way to imagine this dome over, this protective dome over us. And for centuries, thousands of years, people have looked at this dome for comfort and kinship through the hours of the night. Their stories are attached to it. This is a collective history of humanity dating back thousands of years. It's all written here above us if we only take time to read it. Or, alternatively, imagine that you're not looking up right now, but that you're looking down. Instead of this being a protective dome overhead, imagine this being a net of stars below us. So that were it not for this planet that you're attached to by the force of gravity, that you'd actually be falling through space toward those stars. Maybe at some point you'd encounter one that had blue whales and redwood trees and a breathable atmosphere. One could always hope, but maybe not. Mm-hmm. Maybe you just keep falling through space. You'll know when your brain makes that shift laying out here, when you can suddenly feel yourself grabbing and clutching for some little rock or tuft of grass to hang on to. You will know when you've made that mental switch. For now, I'm just going to hang on for dear life, be glad for the planet I live on. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Oh, wonderful. Good story.
Thank you all for coming out. You guys got a good clear night. Go out tomorrow night. It's going to be clear tomorrow night.
Peggy Day is sticking with her story, too, back down on Earth, among the community she's been a part of for 50 years. She continues to work doggedly to help her neighbors understand how doable it is to reclaim and preserve the precious night sky they're so lucky to have.
I'm hoping that eventually it just becomes like not watering your lawn. I don't think you can find a green lawn in Point Reyes Station. That's all done by the community. The community passes it on. It becomes an ethos in our community that you don't need to waste water by growing grass. And so I think that having the lights be muted will become part of the culture here. It already is. It already is. It's already building that way. And I feel like the people in town that have worked so hard on other issues in this town, like building our community center, our dance palace, building the preschool, all these things that have happened in the last 50 years, this is my thing to leave to the people I love and their children and their grandchildren, and leave to my town if I can.
That episode of Nocturne was produced by Vanessa Lowe. Kent Sparling co-created the podcast and composed the theme music. We'll have a link to that story and the rest of their series at klw.org/crosscurrents. The Crosscurrents team includes Hussein Khan, Aru Nair, Julia Haney, Nagar Ajayabi, James Rollins, Ganedi Joe Johnson, Victor Tentz, Shireen Adel, Lisa Morehouse, Angela Johnston, Marissa Ortega Welch, and Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Sunni Khalid.